Good evening, everybody. My name is Chris, and I am an alcoholic. It's good to be up here. I always enjoy coming up here and speaking with you all. And every once in a while, something really cool happens. I'll bump into someone who's been here, and they'll introduce themselves to me in a meeting and thank me for coming up here. And it happens all over the place. This year, it happened in Minneapolis. And it just happened again the other day in New Vernon, New Jersey. A woman's name is Nancy Blackhair. Probably, I don't know how long ago she was in here, but she was very sweet. Anyway, I was thinking about what am I going to talk about tonight? And I decided a thought came to me very, very strongly. I wanted to talk about the scale of alcoholism. Now, If you're in here for drugs, what I'd like you to do is, if I say alcohol, just transpose drugs, because much the same type of problem happens within addictive illness. Many of the same manifestations of the illness happen with drugs, is just like it happens with alcohol. We become dependent on a substance, and when that happens, we're caught up. We're caught up in the struggle of trying to manage this dependence. And that wouldn't be so bad if it wasn't for the fact that addictive illness is an illness of minimization. What we do is we are really in trouble. Our life is on fire. Our personal relationships are messed up. We're not consistent in the places where we really need to be responsible. A lot of things are going on, and we minimize it. In my own personal experience, I'll tell you this. I crashed and totaled 9 cars before I was 24. I had 3 DUIs before I was 26, and I'd lost my family by the time I was 28. And never did it occur to me that I needed to quit drinking. I would say to myself, I've got to quit driving. It's an illness of minimization. It takes a long, long time, and it takes a lot of work and processes and meetings and desperation for us to come to terms with how much trouble we're really in. And that's a devastating symptom of an illness, to not know you really have the illness. Can you imagine if you had cancer or heart disease and you just refused to admit it to yourself, refused to go to treatment for it, and be real resentful at treatment for it? You wouldn't survive very long. Well, that's why we lose so many people to addiction and alcoholism, because it's very, very difficult. Inherent in the illness is a difficulty assessing where you are in that illness. You're going to minimize. Well, it's not really that much trouble. Well, you've had DUIs, you've crashed cars. Well, it's bad breaks, misunderstandings, Or we don't even address it, because to address it, we have to bring it out into the light of day, and we can't do that because we're caught up in this. We're rolling down the hill with this thing called addiction or alcoholism. And we just can't let go, because we don't know. Letting go sometimes can be scarier than hanging on. One of the statements in the book Alcoholics Anonymous is that we have two alternatives. And I believe this today. We have two alternatives. Live life along spiritual lines, or die an alcoholic death, or die a drug addict death. Okay? Live along spiritual lines, die an alcoholic death. Those are our choices. And you know what we do when somebody comes up and tells us that's our choice? We sit there like this. What should I do? Call up the doctor. Doctor, can you give me an explanation of what dying an alcoholic death would be like? Like how much time it takes? That's insane. But we're looking at it like it's two really crappy choices. It's really not. Living life along spiritual lines actually opens the door to a really productive and successful life. the things that you want to do, you're going to be able to do them better coming from a spiritual plane, safe, sound, and sober. So this illness, the tricky part of this illness is we're faced with die an alcoholic death, live life along spiritual lines, and we're looking for door number three. You know, just give me anything. You know, don't tell me that. I don't want meetings and work the steps and get a sponsor and go and drive all around and sit in church basements and, you know, therapy. You know, kill me now. I don't want to do that. Yet it's doing that, living life along spiritual lines, that opens up your life to everything. Now, one of the reasons I wanted to talk about the scale of alcoholism is because this particular facility has a reputation for dealing with people that have been to other facilities or have really seriously tried to separate from drugs and alcohol and found that they had real difficulty doing that. Okay, that's one of the things that this place is famous for. The reluctant or the reluctance to recover, or the person who really, really, really has tried and found that they just couldn't get separated, they relapsed. Okay. Now, one of the things that that does not really get talked about in meetings, but one of the things I think you all need to know, because it could mean your survival from this illness, is that there's a scale of alcoholism. I'll describe it from my own personal experience. I drank like a fish. I mean, I was drunk all the time in the 80s. So I hung out with people who would drink. And in the 70s, I was high all the time. So I would hang out with people that would do drugs. I shifted my social focus over to these type of individuals. Because you just don't get high with a bunch of people that don't get high, or you don't get drink and get drunk with people that don't drink. It's not comfortable to do. So I shifted my social focus over to people who drank and used the way I thought I did. Come to find out, you know, yeah, they partied a little with me, but they didn't party like I partied. Okay, they didn't drink like I drank, and they didn't do drugs like I did drugs. I did it with a vengeance. And I just thought that these people were the same way as me. But there were a few individuals who really, really seemed to have an alcohol problem or a drug problem. But what happened was, let's say they got a job, or they found a girlfriend, or, you know, they wanted to change their life. They were able to stop or moderate their alcohol consumption or their drug use. They were what I would call, you know, drug abusers or alcohol abusers. Me being alcoholic, I was alcoholic dependent and didn't know this. Now, a lot of times in the 12-step fellowships, you get a lot of people who come in who were alcohol abusers or drug abusers. They haven't yet lost the power of choice over whether they pick up again or how much they use. They got in a lot of trouble. Maybe they got some DUIs. Maybe the boss pulled an intervention. Who knows? But they show up in the rooms, and they have not yet lost the power of choice over whether they drink or not. They can say no. Now, a lot of these people are in the rooms, both in NA, AA, everywhere. And they're different than me. Okay, I recognized this right away because I was desperate to stay separated from drugs and alcohol. And I couldn't. I mean, at the end of my drinking, I knew to put alcohol in my body was poisoning me. I would get obliterated drunk and then be as hungover as you could possibly be and have to go to work the next day. I mean, who would want to live involved in a struggle like that? I was desperate to get out. And so basically I came in and I did what I thought you were supposed to do in AA. Don't drink and go to meetings. That's what I thought you were supposed to do. That's what I thought a program was. Just say no for today. I'm not drinking today. And I gave that a really good shot. And you know what happened? On the way to an AA meeting, the thought crossed my mind that I should go buy a gallon of vodka. And I went and I bought a gallon of vodka and I started drinking it. And about two drinks into it, I realized how large this mistake was, because I had managed to stay sober a couple of months by going to a lot of meetings, to outpatient, you know, telling everybody I was alcoholic. I made a really serious demonstration that I wasn't going to drink anymore, and I ended up drinking again. Now, that places me in a different class than other people. I'm not saying 50% of the people in AA are not alcoholic. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that there's a scale of alcoholism, and I'll refer back to the book Alcoholics Anonymous, which is, you know, where I've gained my personal recovery, and it's the book that I use to keep at least centered somewhat in my philosophy and in my talking about recovery. There's a part in the book that says one's ability to stay separated from alcohol will depend upon how much power they have lost in drink. Okay? This is the way Bill Wilson said it. He was a stockbroker, shyster guy on Wall Street. He was not an addictions expert. He didn't really know how to phrase it really well, but that's what he said. He said that if someone has the ability to choose whether they drink or not, then they haven't lost the power of choice. That would make sense. Now, for the alcoholic, he basically says the most honest desire to stay separated from alcohol is no defense from it. That separates you into the classification that they describe in the book as a real alcoholic. In the step book, in step one, they talk about people starting to show up in Alcoholics Anonymous who were barely potential alcoholics, heavy drinkers at best. And that started to happen in the 40s. Well, can you imagine what it's like today? We're all health conscious, and everybody is trained to look, see if there's a problem. But the alcoholic is in a class by themselves. There's another section in the book that basically says in the ninth step promises, no matter how far down the scale you have gone, you will see that your experience can benefit others. So Bill is talking about a scale. No matter how far down the scale isn't how much trouble you got in. The scale isn't how much you drank. The scale isn't how long you drank. The scale is simply a barometer of how much choice you've lost in drink. If you honestly want to, and you find you cannot give up liquor entirely, or if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. That's what it says in the chapter to the agnostic. So that's what separates an alcoholic from a non-alcoholic: lack of power, choice, and control. And not everyone experiences that. Now, why am I telling you this? You are going to be encouraged to go to 12-step fellowship meetings. That's what this place is going to do. Now, there's no monopoly that the 12-step fellowships have on recovery. There's other recovery processes, but the majority of people that have actually recovered are in the 12-step fellowships. The other forms of therapy for the alcoholic or the drug addict have their successes, but they don't have anywhere near the numbers of the 12-step fellowship. Certainly, the 12-step fellowships have the best success rate with the most people. So, obviously, that's where you're going to be encouraged to go. Now, one of the reasons I'm telling you about the scale of alcoholism is you have to be very, very careful where you land in these 12-step fellowships. There are really good meetings out there, and there are really bad meetings out there. I'll tell you right now. Now, if I would rather have a bad meeting than none, don't get me wrong. But if you're in real trouble, your best bet is to find the good meetings. Find the meetings where they're busy. Find the meetings where there's action going on. Find the meeting where there's sponsors who will take you through the steps, and they have service commitments, and there's speaking commitments, and you celebrate anniversaries, and everybody learns who you are, and what are you doing after the meeting? Let's go to the diner. These are the type of meetings that you may need to survive. How many people in here have gone to meetings and found that they put drugs or alcohol back in their body? How many of them? Okay, like almost all of you. Okay? Now, what's wrong? What happened? Why didn't it work? Well, depending on the scale of alcoholism, however much power, choice, and control you've lost, if you're down the scale, then that just means you got to be busier than the normal people. You have to get busy. You've got to really get involved. You can't get sober like the guy sitting next to you who all he's ever done is gone to the Tuesday night meeting once a week and sat there like this and made coffee once in a while. You aren't going to make it if you try to do that. You need to plug in with an intensity and a sense of urgency, or you're going to continue the cycle of relapse. Now, that depends on how much trouble you're in. This is a first step dilemma that we each have. We need to be truthful with ourselves. We need to look back in our experience. Have we made decisions to never drink again and then found that we had a drink in our hand? Did we make decisions to say, I am never touching that cocaine again, or I am never gonna do dope, and, I'm done, and found out you're using again? This is the insanity that they talk about in the second step. To be restored to sanity means to be restored to a place where you actually have power, choice, and control, where you can stay separated from alcohol or drugs if that's what you choose to do. That's the restoration of a sane mind. Now, if this water was poisonous, and I gave it to somebody to drink, and they started stumbling around and being really belligerent, and they puked on the carpet, and they passed out, and they woke up the next day not knowing what happened, wouldn't it be crazy if, when I handed it to them again, they drank it again, knowing that it would do that? But don't we do that time and time again with alcohol and drugs? We're insane. Where it concerns alcohol doesn't mean that we're psychopaths or, schizophrenics. That's not what it's talking about. It's talking about, from a sane state of mind, we would never drink alcohol again, knowing what we know about what it does to us, but we do anyway. That's insane, and that's powerlessness, and that's lack of power, choice, and control. So, there are meetings with a level of intensity and involvement that are powerful enough to offer you a defense against the next drink. If they get you in there and they get you busy, and you're going all the time and you're participating and you're talking with your sponsor and you're going on speaking events and you're going out to the dining room, making phone calls, that type of intensity somehow generates the power, the choice, and the control over alcohol or drugs. Many AA members call that the power of God, because that makes the most sense to them. But it's that involvement, it's that action, getting really busy, plugging yourself in, making it the absolute priority in your life, over family, over work. Okay? I'll tell you what type of intensity I had when I first came in, because I knew I was going to die. Every time I drank, I had to be medically detoxed. It was really, and I started to hallucinate and go into DTs. It was ugly. When I finally figured that the answer is in these 12-step fellowships, I came in and I called up my boss and one night and I said, look, if you have any plans on giving me overtime that's going to interfere with my meetings, I'll quit right now, because that can't happen. Nothing can get in the way of my meetings. And I told my family, look, here is my schedule. Do not book anything during these periods of time of the day. I am going to be at a meeting. I don't care if somebody dies. I'm missing the funeral. That's how much intensity I had getting involved in these meetings, because it was survival. It was survival. Now, I don't know any of you specifically. I don't know any of you personally. And I don't know where you are on the scale. You could be up the scale. you very easily could be at a point where maybe you can make the right about face and straighten everything out. It's doubtful to me, because people like that don't end up in here. More than likely, you've gone down the scale farther than you even think, and you need to understand something. This is a progressively fatal illness, and it's an awful illness. When we die, when we check out, we go out in disgrace. Cancer is a better illness to have. Heart disease is a better illness to have. You want to know why? Because that'll at least allow you the dignity of putting your affairs in order before you check out. When you check out as an alcoholic or an addict, everybody either pities you or hates you that's anywhere near you. Because you've disappointed on every level any expectations they might have. So this is a serious illness. Addictive illness is the number one the illness that is in first place for affecting people in America today. It's ahead of cancer, it's ahead of diabetes, it's ahead of everything. There are more people that are afflicted with addictive illness in America today than any other problem. Okay, and there's so much misunderstanding about it. It's an unorthodox illness. Any illness that allows you to think you don't have it is an unorthodox illness. And any illness that requires a spiritual instead of a medical solution is an unorthodox illness too. They found out a long time ago that to recover from this illness, one must live along spiritual lines. One must engage in a spiritual life. Does that mean, you know, running back to church or selling flowers at the airport? It really doesn't. What it means is practicing certain principles in your life. Principles that have been found to create a spiritual condition conducive to establishing power, choice, and control back in one's life over the addictive substance, whatever that might be. Now, there's a great line in the 12 and 12. I believe it's in the foreword. It says the 12 steps are a set of principles, spiritual in their nature, if when practiced as a way of life, will expel the obsession to drink and allow the user to become happily and usefully whole. Think about that statement. The steps are principles, spiritual in their nature. If we try to live along these lines, what will happen is the obsession that going back to drugs and alcohol, even though you really don't want to, these will expel that obsession. And not only that, allow you to become happily and usefully whole. Something I know we all want. I know we all want to be able to deal. I know we all want to be able to have decent personal relationships when we want them. I know that we all want to get to a place where we can be dependable and healthy. That's the promise in the step book. And I'm up here tonight bearing witness to that fact. I was a horrific alcoholic. And reluctantly, not out of any sense of virtue, reluctantly, I came back into AA, started working these things because I was desperate and just didn't want to feel bad anymore. And I found that the results of this spiritual living, it's not just the steps, there's a lot of other things that are involved in a spiritual life. But I found that by attempting, because I'm not going to say I live a spiritual life, I fall short every day in word, thought, and deed. But by attempting this, the obsession has been expelled, and I've become happily and usefully whole. The promises in the book and inherent in the recovery program have come true for me. And I got to tell you, I did a 12-step call about a month ago. This guy I went to high school with, and back when I was in high school, he drank like me. He had a relationship with alcohol like me. He didn't just drink with me. He had a relationship with alcohol like I did. He drank it to feel right, just like I did. I drank it to feel right, to just kind of escape the pain of being me. And this guy was bad. He joined the Navy so he could drink, and he went on and on and on. Now, I made contact with him about 8 years ago. And I sent him a series of recovery tapes, you know, because I had heard he was in AA and not really doing really well. So I sent him this set of recovery tapes, and we reconnected. Now, over the years, he's moved from one place to another, from one area with bad meetings to another area with bad meetings to another area with bad meetings to another area with bad meetings. Okay, that's what this guy did. And he never was able to get sober for any period of time. He would work the steps with a sponsor, and then just there was no encouragement to continue to keep living these principles. And what would happen is the time would come and alcohol would go back in his body. Well, he called me up about a month ago, 2 months ago, and he said, "Chris, I'm dying. I'm dying. I want to kill myself. I can't live like this." And I said, are you really done, Steve? Are you done? Are you willing to do anything? I'll help you, but are you willing to do anything?" He said, "Anything." So I said, "Okay, tomorrow I'm coming. You know, pack up some clothes. I am taking you out of Coalport, Pennsylvania, and I'm bringing you back to the land of the living here in New Jersey. I'm going to put you in a sober house where everybody is about the business of recovery, and we're going to see what happens." And he was willing to do that. Took him to a detox, right from the detox to the sober house, and he's got a sponsor, he's working the steps, every night he's at meetings, he's active, his whole life is about recovery, and this guy, the lights are going back on in this guy's head. And his eyes are, he's waking back up. He's been suffering from a grave illness, and he's starting to get healthy now. And every time I see him, you know, he's different. He's come back to life. You know, so I know, and this is like one story, I could tell you 500 like this. I know this from my own personal experience, and I know it from my experience working with others, that this thing works. But it takes a commitment. I'll tell you a story that'll kind of explain what kind of a commitment I mean. There's a chicken and a pig walking down the street one day, and they see a sign, "Help feed the poor." And the chicken looks over at the pig and says, "Hey man, we should do that. That'd be a good thing. Let's help feed the poor." And the pig goes, "Well, what are we going to do?" And the chicken says, "We can feed them ham and eggs." And the pig goes, "That's easy for you to say. That's just a decision to lay a couple eggs. That's a commitment of my whole life. If I'm going to feed them ham." That's the type of commitment we have to make. There was a guy, before I came to the meeting, there was a guy who came over to my house. And he's really involved in the drama. I mean, the drama is just coming down on him. He just got caught for, you know, he's new in recovery. And he just got caught because he hadn't paid income taxes in 5 years. He's like an oil rig driller, and, you know, he's all over the world. And he just didn't bother paying his taxes. He lost his job because one of the financial firms on Wall Street that went belly up funded the exploratory drilling that he did. So he's out of a job, and he was making good money. He was making $350,000 a year. So he had built up this expensive life house, life for himself. He had the big house and the nice cars, and the kids are going to private school, and there's, you know, country club memberships and everything. I mean, he's got a big nut that he has to make every month. So his fall was really fast. As soon as the money was cut off, his fall was really fast. So he's dealing with, his whole life is falling apart in front of him. He can't afford to continue to support his family. And he's got no prospects. And he's caught up in this drama. And you know what I told him to do? I said, "Get to a meeting every night. Get to a meeting every night. Work with a sponsor." And he's doing this. So do a fourth step. Find a way to reach out and help somebody that's in more trouble than you are. And he's in the beginning, he's looking at me like I'm crazy. It's like, "Don't you know what's going on in my life?" And I know that he has challenges in his life. They are challenges. But if he's going to remain sober and start living along spiritual lines, a couple of years from now, he's not even going to remember those problems. He's going to have moved on into a much more effective lifestyle. And that drama that's all-consuming is just, that's just what it is. It's drama. Yes, he has challenges. He needs to find a job. He needs to downsize. He needs to sell some stuff. you know, big deal. If he continues to do what we're asking him to do, he's going to at least survive it. Woman came into the Tuesday night meeting last night, really upset. Good friend of hers that she got sober with had put a bullet through his head. Okay? And she was really, really sad. This was somebody that she got sober with, but who just didn't put enough into this to be able to stay. It was a half-measured attempt. Couple meetings, you know. Life caught up with them. Everything got in the way of meeting steps in service. And he crashed. He just crashed. And what happens to us sometimes is we get to a place of pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization with addictive illness. If you haven't felt that, know that, you know, you keep on the way you're doing, you will get to that point. And that's the point where we wish for the end. We don't want to feel bad anymore. And we really seriously contemplate suicide. And some of us do it. The alcoholic is 60 times more likely to take their own life than the non-alcoholic. When you go for life insurance and you admit to being a recovered alcoholic, you'll pay four times the life insurance policy. Because the actuators know it. They know that there's a good chance you could relapse, and if you relapse, you know, anything can happen. So I see the good examples every day, and I see the bad examples every day. And it doesn't take a genius to put two and two together. The people that are sticking around are the people that are doing well. The people who decide that there are things more important than their recovery program are usually the people that are dying. In the early 90s, I got exposed to good AA. All right. I got exposed to the process where Bill Wilson stated this. This is a Bill Wilson quote. The primary purpose of an AA group is the teaching and practice of the 12 steps. That's a Bill Wilson quote. Okay. You can go into meetings today and they're not teaching you the steps and they're not practicing the steps. I got exposed to some people who were teaching and practicing the 12 steps, which is supposed to be the sole purpose of a group. And it changed my life. It changed my life. I stopped being a cranky, sober guy hanging on by my fingernails to somebody who became happy, joyous, and free, happily and usefully whole, because of this process. I've had the spiritual awakening as the result of these 12 steps. And it's somewhere around 1992 or 93. Now I'm sponsoring a bunch of people that are drinking on me. Okay? They're going to the fellowship meetings where everybody's sharing about who knows what. You know, the fan belt broke on the Mercedes today, and, you know, I just had to make a meeting, you know, because I felt really bad. You know, and they're drinking because there's not enough power there for them to stay sober because they've gone down the scale more than the people that are talking about the fan belt have. So they're drinking and the fan belt people aren't. Now, for one reason or another, I'm sponsoring these guys. And I think to myself, you know, I've just gone through this process. Well, I'm going to bring over my house and I'm going to start this process with these guys. This is in the mid-90s. Probably about 12 guys in 2 years came over to my house and went through the steps. 12 guys who stayed, who actually did all this. Actually is a good word to use, by the way, when you're looking at these steps. Because you can go to meetings where people will talk about them, they'll share about them, they'll philosophize about them, they'll give you opinions about them, but they haven't done them. Okay? Now, the guys who actually came over to my house and actually did these, they went and they paid the money back, they went and they made direct amends, they started a discipline of prayer meditation in the morning, they inventoried all their character defects, they were completely brutally honest with every little dark cranny of their past, and they started to take other people through the steps. Every single one of those guys is still in the meetings. Every one of them. They're card-carrying members in good standing in AA, and their lives, the quality of their lives, are out the roof. Now, not everybody created the enthusiasm to do this. Some of the people said, wow, you know, the stuff that Chris is doing, it's pretty extreme. You know, I don't really think my problems, you know, really needs this. They're all gone. Okay, so it doesn't take a rocket scientist to see the people that did this are all still here. They did not drink. They did not use. Their lives are really, really good. And the people that didn't are gone. I don't know where they are. I know a lot of them drank because I heard about it, or they told me themselves. Some of them may have been able to stay sober. Who knows? Who knows how far down the scale each of these individuals went? But this is a significant experience for me. This is significant because it shows me that this stuff works. You know, why am I up here, you know, evangelizing for the steps? It's because there are probably people in this room that need to hear this. It might mean the difference between life and death for you. It really might. Then again, you might think that you're here by a big mistake, you know. Who knows? Who knows what's inside each of us? But I will tell you that inherent in alcoholism is sometimes an utter inability to recognize how much trouble you're in. You know, you think that this is all a big overreaction. And trust me, it's not. However sick you think you are, multiply it by 10 and you're getting close. That's how devastating this illness is. Okay, this illness devastates us across the board. The personal relationships. We can't have relationships with the men or women that we fall in love with. You know, we're totally dysfunctional. We're ruled by fear and anger and resentment and shame and depression. I mean, this is what happens to us. This is a devastating illness. And it's just like us to minimize it. And that's what we do when we're really ill. So it takes places like this to give you enough time to start to recognize how much trouble you're in. When you start to recognize how much trouble you're in, then you're able to summon up the enthusiasm to get busy to try to get better. I don't know if that makes any sense, you know, to any specific person out there, but this is basically the way I describe recovery. Okay, the scale of alcoholism, your first step truth. You got to know where you are. You got to know where you are. There's a lot of help in this place. There's a lot of people who have dealt with people year after year after year. They can help you find where you are on the scale of alcoholism. And if you're down the scale, you have got to know that you have to make recovery your number one priority. If you fool around with it, then what you're doing is choosing to continue to drink and use and continue to have your life get worse and worse and worse and continue to be more and more of a disappointment to the people around you. I don't think any of us from a sane state of mind would make that choice. Oh yeah, you know, what I want to do is, you know, I want to just keep becoming, you know, just keep getting worse. I want to keep being a lousy friend. I want to even be a worse friend next year than I am this year. I want to be a worse family member next year than I am this year. I want to be a worse employee next year than I am this year. That's the choice you're making. That's the choice you're making to not live life along spiritual lines. But it's not clear like that. It's not clear like that. Go to a meeting tonight, die an alcoholic death. We don't think clearly like that. What we think is, well, there's something really good on TV. I went to a meeting yesterday. You know, I'll catch one tomorrow. No big deal. We don't think, go to a meeting tonight or die an alcoholic death. We don't have the clarity to be able to see it that way. And that's because of the clouds of delusion that pervade addictive illness. So find where you are on the scale. If you're truly powerless over alcohol, if you're truly powerless over drugs, you need to know about it. And you need to take responsibility. You need to take responsibility for your illness. You know, if you have diabetes, you got to take responsibility to take the insulin. If your kidneys are shot, you need to take responsibility to get the dialysis. You don't say, friends are on TV tonight, I'm going to skip dialysis tonight. But we do that all the time with meetings. We do that all the time with our service commitments. We do that all the time when it comes to calling our sponsor. You need to take responsibility for your illness or you're going to die. And I'll tell you what, you're going to die in disgrace. And I don't think anybody wants that. So that's the first step. That is the scale of alcoholism, and that is the bad news. The good news is there's a lot more in this facility, and there's a lot more in this spiritual process than you're giving it credit for. Your life can get a whole lot better than you can possibly perceive at this moment in time. You can have a much happier life than you even think possible if you get involved in this thing. That's all I got. Thanks.